cash rules everything around me. Queen, get the money, dollar dollar bill, yo.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. This is episode 24 of the 2023 season. We're recording on July 11th. You'll hear this from July 12th and on. I've got a couple of fantastic guests with me today, a couple of players that are doing incredibly well in the NFBC Online Championship. That's the 12-team roto with a huge six-figure prize going on there. So one of these gentlemen you've heard before, he's been on the show. He's actually one of my favorite guests just because, I don't know, just unpredictable, sharp, never know what you're going to get. But he's an actual attorney, but we call him the surly attorney. He's an absolutely huge Angel fan. He actually turned me around on Carlos Estevez, which is a big win for a lot of folks. And he's currently third overall in the NFBC OC as we get ready for the second half, along with teammate Ryan Venancio. You can follow him on Twitter at StudSterkelFan. Ladies and gentlemen, Daniel Preppis. What's up, Dan?
Hey, it's the return of me, man. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it was great the first time. I've heard you on a couple of other things since. So I think your first appearance was on my show, right, in the preseason, or had you been on something before?
No, Bubba let me do the Angels preview. He's super awesome. He just DM'd me and he's like, any interest in doing the Angels preview? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I thought you'd never ask. So
I think that's why. Yeah, I heard you there. That's right. I heard you on Bubba's. I was like, all right, got to get Dan Preppis on. My second guest today, you've actually heard him once on the Dead Pull Hitter, the Pull Hitter podcast. But he's kind of underground, or at least has been, or at least unless you're in the FTN Discord streets or some of the other Discords, I'm sure. But so this guy is he's a brand strategy director for a media company over on the East Coast. He lives in New York City. He's a longtime FTN sub, but he's got quite a great process that we'll talk about. He currently has three teams in the OC. One's tied for 70th overall, one's 7th overall, and one is 1st overall going here into the second half. On Twitter, at Fru Dorte, that's F-R-E-W-D-O-R-T-E, a play on words on his name, Drew Forte. What's going on, Drew?
Hey, Vlad. Thanks so much for having me. And yeah, it's been a great ride. I can't believe the teams have done as well as they have, but it's been great. So looking forward to discussing, and hopefully the guys continue the good work in the second half.
Well, actually, before we continue here, I do want to ask, are you a believer in jinxes or superstitions? I ask you only because around this time last year, I had a former poker pro stud player, Griffin Benger. He was 1st and 2nd overall in the OC, and obviously things didn't pan out for him the way they probably should have. So are you a believer in that at all?
I am superstitious, lad, but when it comes to this, it's going to be up to the players. It's going to be up to my fab decisions, my lineup decisions, and the chips will fall where they are. Well, they land. So in terms of this, what happens will happen, and mm-hmm. hopefully my guys can pull it out. So.
Yeah, well, Drew, I will validate that I disagree with Vlad, because that's all I do is just try to disagree with everybody. But if I'm not mistaken, even though he slipped at the end, he made a hedge bet, Griffin, with Guilds, because they were 1st and 2nd at the time. And then, of course, I'm sure Guilds was upset about this. But Griffin's, I think he fell to 9th, so... He made quite a chunk of change by making that bet. He struck where the iron's hot. So the moral of the story, Drew, is the jinx means no matter what, you're going to make over 20 Gs. So the opposite of the jinx.
Yeah, I try, especially with these 12-team leagues, there's so much variation every week. And, Daniel, I think every week there's been a different leader in the overall standings. So, that's what makes this contest great, is that any given week someone's team gets hot and they can move up, or if you have a bad week you can move down. So definitely taking nothing for granted, taking it week by week, and just looking for ways to keep the team going.
And that's the thing about these contests, like you just mentioned it, it's a massive contest over 2500 teams. Is it 2500 plus?
Yeah, how many teams? 60.
Yeah, and so I mean, there could be a team that technically that's like 80th overall, right? That can come up and creep up. We've seen these things happen before. There's still a lot of season to go, but we will see a lot of teams drop out. It's going to be a lot easier for the competitive teams to win out fab bids, especially if you have a little bit of money left over. And there's just going to be a lot of movement. So it's really freaky. And anything can happen. So it'll be a fun ride and a lot of time to go. But I did want to go over, just kind of talk a little bit about both of your guys' teams. We're also going to today talk a little bit about some breakout players that we expect to, guys that have had slow starts in the first half, we expect to step up in the second half. And then we'll do a little bit of division predictions and awards here towards the end. But starting with your team, Dan, and you're no stranger to being there around the top. You and Ryan, you guys drafted this team. This is an early OC. And for some reason, I only noticed this recently. I'm in this league where you guys are in. You guys are the team with 111 points in a 12 teamer, which is pretty amazing considering what's 120 max.
It was 113 at one point, but
fact of the matter is, it's that like I've got five OCs. This is the one that I just know I'm not getting there. You know, I'll be like, maybe I can pull out the second place. That'll be nice, but. I always hate when I see you guys jumping into drafts. And of course, you know, if you're drafted in like late January, early February, you're essentially only getting serious players, sharks, and people that are ready, people that know what they're doing. But this is a really solid team you guys have. You have 8 of your 10 categories are basically over 80th percentile. Only weaknesses we're really seeing at the time are wins and saves. I think one of those categories you probably have a little bit more control over, but did want to ask you just in general, how do you and Ryan split up your duties, I guess, preseason draft, during the draft, and then also in season with fab and lineup decisions?
Well, kind of the easy one, I would say, from a draft perspective, and this is why we team up a lot. We just kind of balance each other out. It's a good combo because he's obviously locking in on the players that's like, we got to get them, right? Got to jump them. And I'm usually like, we can get them next round. And so it's just kind of a good balance because he's focused on the players while the draft's going on. And it allows me to just completely read the board and try to predict what people are doing. So it's kind of like I don't need to juggle two things at once. And we're on the phone. So usually our drafts usually go really well for that reason. And we kind of made a market effort to start that everybody kind of has that default, like you got to get pitchers early. And in Maine, that's true to a degree. But from an OC perspective, you can start getting great guys around pick 60. And so that was the plan going in. We wanted to get a pick towards the end because we wanted Tatis. That was kind of an obvious one. And then kind of, like I said, we knew we wanted Robert. And when Robert fell to us, then we kind of ripped off three pitchers in a row. Castillo, Wheeler fell to a max, Gallen fell to a max. And let me tell you something, when you start with those hitters and you get those three pitchers, you're zoned in and you're loving the team as we all do in 12 teamers. So that was the draft. In terms of the prep, we're just basically talking all off season. I usually like to start is, who you got your eye on. We usually start with kind of the minor spec guys. Because he's a huge dynasty guy. So we'll kind of start looking at the minors guys because early in draft season, that's where the values are in DCs. So we kind of cover the minor leaguers and then kind of as it gets rolling, then we'll start with the obviously the majors guys and just kind of a natural flow. We just really work well together.
Hey, Daniel. So question for you, because this year started working with a partner, the OC that's in 70th. I have a partner, Jason Perkins. He's also an FTN subscriber. It's our first year partnering together. What have you seen working with Ryan from year one to year two in your relationship and working together? What have you seen as you guys have grown that partnership, taken off and where you've gotten stronger working together?
I think one of the things that you're saying what's like changed over time from being able to work.
Yeah, like where have you seen the partnership grow?
I think our fab process is really but refined, and I kind of want to go back to that hallmark that if you have a team, it's important to kind of take advantage of the focus in terms of one person focusing on one thing and the other. So from a fab process standpoint, I let him do the initial sets, and he doesn't kind of worry about quote unquote overthinking it. It's just we put the guys out there that I want, group them together, and then we talk on the phone, and he kind of gives me a heads up to his thought process and that. And then usually around 6 o'clock, I'll jump in and kind of do my own assessment. I always kind of have him, I go, don't worry about setting bids too high. I'll bring them down. So that's kind of a good symbiosis that we have that way. And it also takes my stress level down personally, that anxiety that, you know, last minute is never good, but it's not really last minute if somebody's already done kind of the initial groundwork for it. So that's something that's refined, because I think last year when we did it, we would kind of talk on the phone around 4:35 and kind of shoot the shit, but it really wasn't like an efficient use of time. So once we have that kind of trust, delegating certain parts, I think we refine that this year versus last year.
And the team itself, I mean, it's really solid overall, considering you spent a third round pick on JT Realmuto. You also do have MJ Melendez, who hasn't done very much. Maybe this reinforces my catchers don't matter theory, but nevertheless, digress there. Offense is loaded. You've got, obviously, you mentioned Fernando Tatis. You've got Lewis Robert Jr. having his breakout, finally healthy, at least until the home run derby here. Picked up Ellie De La Cruz. You've got Jose Ramirez in the first round. Nice. He hasn't really even gotten to his, you know, typical Jose type season. So that's like four potential top 20 guys. Then you've got the India breakout, Jonathan India. You've got Ketel Marte, Christian Walker. Nice surprise performances so far from Josh Naylor and Lane Thomas. Pitching is loaded. You've got two of the top five starting pitchers year to date, at least according to the Razzball Player Rater. That's Zach Gallen, Zach Eflin, a couple of Zachs there. Luis Castillo, Zach Wheeler. You got the third Zach. Make that trifecta there. Brian Wu, Logan Gilbert, Hunter Green in the wings. Reed Detmers on occasion is good. And then your closers, man, top notch. You got Carlos Estevez and Fairbanks. Probably will need another considering you need saves. So, man, this is a pretty good team. I guess, you know, tell me something about it, how you feel about it for the remainder of the season. Are one of you or I know, you, I guess maybe you would be the less optimistic one about stuff, right? Am I correct there? Would you be like, this isn't going to make it? Or is somewhere in the back of your head, like, we can do it, we can take it?
Well, I think the only way for me to counter my kind of call it innate cynicism is I kind of unleash my delusions of grandeur. And that, I think that helps balance out my cynicism. And I think one of my favorite things that I do to call it reinforce the positivity when I'm like, I'm going to collapse like I do every year, is I think there's a reason why both Drew and I know that 2460 number as far as the total OC teams, because whenever I like to brag about how high I am late in the season, I start it when I show people, I go, look at how many teams there are. Guess which place I'm in. I go all the way up to the top and they go, wow. And I go, and it's not just luck because I have another team that's top 50. So it proves that I'm good. I've literally done that same thing probably for like 15 friends. So that's how I balance out my negativity. I
certainly love it.
And just to jump in, I do a similar thing. I start at the top and I say, here's my name highlighted in green up here. Here's another one highlighted in green. And then scroll all the way down and you can see how many teams are there. So like Daniel said, it's fun. And I don't think either one of us has counted our chickens before they hatched, but it's fantasy baseball is fun. And I think we're both enjoying the ride and enjoying our team's success.
I got to tell you, Drew, you're probably a better man than me, because if I had your setup with those two teams, I would have a lot of problems kind of, not doing rosterbation about 15 hours a day. So I can't think of a better thing to do than stare at two top 10 teams. So good for you, man.
I appreciate it. I think what happened, so last year, so I won my first OC 2 years ago, finished 104th. And then last year I had two OC teams and both were in contention the last week. And between those two teams and a home league team, I lost and I finished out of the money in all of them. And I think looking back at that, it's really pushed me to up my prep and process and also keep grinding every week and not take anything for granted, because things can change and guys who are hot can go cold and other teams' cold guys can get hot. So I try not to let my guard down and, you know, always looking for ways to, you know, to make the squad better.
By the way, I do want to ask you, Daniel, a couple of questions about your specific team. But Drew, since you already brought it up, we talked before the show a little bit about your process, and it's a really interesting one. I think every week, either on the show or listening to other podcasts, we learn about what makes some of the better players in the industry such good players. And a lot of it is that preparation, the organization. But you told us a lot about the things that you do in the preseason to get yourself ready. And I was quite impressed. So I thought maybe you might share with our listeners here how you prep for the draft season.
Absolutely. Thanks for the kind words, Vlad. So to begin, I like to read the process, read it every year. Jeff Zimmerman and Tanner Bell, it's a great resource to read. Helps a lot of just strategy and, you know, learning, you know, just overall strategy versus player specific analysis. Then, like most folks, read the Baseball Forecaster. I've been reading it probably 6 or 7 years now. Again, it's a great resource. It's really just gives overall snapshots of players. I'm not a high volume player. I only have 5 NFBC teams. So there's guys that I haven't owned in any of those leagues. And it's a great resource to, you know, the guys I didn't own, you know, how did they do, you know, what is Ron and the team, you know, think of their future prospects. And then in addition to those, obviously I'm reading and listening to podcasts, reading a lot of articles. FTN, the draft guide is great. A lot of great articles in there from a lot of different writers. So glad you've done a great job curating that. And then with that, something I implemented this year and I learned from Rob D, the Deadpool hitter, is every time I kind of listened to a podcast or read an article, I would write down if they talked about a strategy, what the strategy was, who mentioned it. If they talked about a player, whether it was positive or negative, I would write that down, you know, player X, pro con, who said it. And I kind of kept a running list. And that helped me throughout my draft process of just, hey, which players were coming up, you know, that up again and again in different resources. And then in terms of pure player analysis, I use the SGP method, Tanner Bell's automated spreadsheet. Larry Schechter obviously came up with SGP. So I use that, and that's great for, you know, looking at projections and how they stack up versus ADP. And then the last couple of years I've adopted Ron Chandler's BABS. So I use them in coordination, and Ron Chandler's BABS is, you know, kind of a different method to projections. And I think it's helpful to, you know, balance out projections and Ron's assets and liabilities. So I use those in combination. And then I look at the kind of list of players that, you know, guys have talked about on podcasts and articles. And that's how I source my wisdom of the crowds approach. And it helps me identify players that I should be in on and players maybe I should be avoiding at ADP. So that's a little bit about my process.
I have a question.
And then, go ahead, Dan.
I have a question about that. One of the things that Vlad talks about a lot, I always think about a lot, is biases, self-awareness of biases. When I was hearing you say kind of the getting kind of the, you know, putting all the different perspectives of the crowd, do you think that that helps you kind of avoid personal biases in a more responsible way as opposed to kind of being like, oh, look, this guy's saying something and being reactive, if you will?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's a big tenet of the process, is trying to avoid bias and using resources to help eliminate those bias. So for me, that's really the projections and Ron's BABS. And I try not to influence those. If you use SGP, you know that you can move plate appearances or innings pitch up or down, and even moving them 20 or 30 spots, you know, up 20, you know, at bats or down 20 innings pitch can really affect a guy's projected value. And so I try not to tinker with that too much, because I do want to try to say, what do the numbers say without my influence? So I'll tweak it here or there if I really think it's off. But like you said, I try to stay out of it and, you know, keep it simple and let the projections, let Ron's system and all the great analysis out there lead me to the players that I should be drafting.
Dan, so I wanted to ask you a question real quick on your some of your drops and if you how you feel about it, if there's anything that you regret there. Nothing major, but you did drop Isak Paredes. I don't know when you did that, but obviously I'm guessing you don't love that, especially with the triple eligibility. Jack Suwinski hitting bombs. Haesung Kim has been pretty solid. And then on the pitching side, can't blame you for any of these. Yusei Kikuchi, Michael Kopech, and Jack Flaherty. Are there any of those guys that you really regret?
Just the Kim one, man, because the timing sucked. We kind of weren't playing him. Just were making wrong calls because he's been kind of streaky as far as when he steals. And it was like 3 weeks ago as soon as we dropped him, he just became more consistent than he did all year. And he's a perfect bench guy. So I kind of regret that one. I just kind of was like, we don't need him. It's a 12-teamer, turn the roster, so to speak. So that's really the only one that I regret. I mean, Paredes is bad luck, but again, it's a 12-teamer. I love Paredes. I've gotten him in a lot of leagues, but the Kim one hurts more than anything because he steals.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I have a team not too far behind you guys, 15th overall, and it was my last OC. So I think I did that one. I think it was one I decided I would do after I came back from Vegas. And I've been struggling with second base there all year. I don't actually remember who I've had there, but I think I lost somebody big. And Kim, yeah, he's been an absolute lifesaver. A team that really needs stolen bases. The guy keeps leading off, hitting against lefties and righties, like, you know, at top of that lineup. That really hasn't even gotten in full swing. So he's been fantastic. I do need to think of a backup plan. I don't know how long this will last, but I think I'll enjoy it for now. Last question on your team, Dan. Mm-hmm. Where do you think it stacks? Like, do you go and look at other rosters around you and then like kind of raise your confidence or lower it based on what you see?
What do you think, Vlad?
I think I know the answer to that. All right, let's move on.
Absolutely. I'm like, why does everybody at the top have Brian Wu? All right, give me a break, kind of thing. I think the one thing that's nice and also awful about our team is I want to say like 80% of the teams in the top 10, maybe 70% have Acuna. So that obviously sucks. But the good about that is we're fine on steals. And I think we're one of the only top teams that have J-Ram. So there's nothing better. The ultimate schadenfreude, I would say, is seeing a pitcher blow up. You know, 9 runs and being like, let's go check the top 20. That's kind of my favorite, call it a game within a game, or, you know, to your point about how do I counteract my cynicism? That's one of many things in my, whatever I can do to keep myself sane, because I was talking to Gills about it because shocker, he's up there and I'm like, I can't handle this, man, the stress every day. And he goes, yeah, you're fucked. You're not even going to make it to August. I'm like, oh, sounds about right. But I got a teammate, so there's that. That's another good thing about the teammate right there.
I love Guilds, man, but we can't let him win back-to-back.
No freaking way.
There's no chance. We can't let it happen. We love you, man, but, you know. But, hey, you know what? If you get there and you get it done, you are a freaking legend. It would be quite amazing. So let's see. Drew, about your teams, I did want to kind of intro them, give people, those that hadn't looked at these teams, kind of give the little overview. I mean, it's amazing across the board. You're one that is currently first overall. Basically, stolen bases are your weakest category, but you've got a nice mix of guys there. You do have the aforementioned Haesung Kim. You got some Jake McCarthy. You got Michael Garcia now atop the lineup. You got Whit Merrifield bringing it back after pretty much a down year. You're even using a little Willy Castro, which is nice. Man, the man almost has 20 steals already. And then Tairo Estrada. So you're kind of set there. And then the base is phenomenal. Obviously no Acuna on this team, but you do have Mookie Betts. You've got Shohei Ohtani. You got in the second round. Matt Olson, I guess, is your fourth or fifth rounder. You got a nice Yandy Muncy combo there to add to those corners. Your middles, you got Willy Adames and Matt McClain in Fab. Merrifield can be moved from second base to the outfield. Outfield's, you know, maybe not elite, but it's still good. And it could be elite if Tyler O'Neill comes back. And then the pitching, I don't think it's as strong as Dan's looking at it. You do have Gausman and McClanahan, so you got two top 10 guys, potentially two top five guys. But then the rest is just solid. Obviously, Nathan Eovaldi, Brian Bello, Bailey Ober has been phenomenal, as has teammate Pablo Lopez. Probably expect a little bit of a bounce back from Yu Darvish. You got Jaymont, Jordan Montgomery, hurt now, maybe a drop. We'll see what happens when the results come back from him on his injury. And then Grayson Rodriguez waiting in the wings. So it's a really nice team. And to top it off, you have probably the best, sexiest trio of closers I've ever seen. So it's Felix Bautista, who's like legit MVP candidate in the AL. Literally, I think he scored the most fantasy points among pitchers. And then you've got Carlos Estevez and Jordan Hicks. So that's hot, man. This is a good team. What do you think?
Oh, Vlad, you're gonna make me blush talking about my team like that. You know, that's high praise. Yeah, I'm gleaming with joy to hear, you know, someone, you know, you're a legend in the game, to talk about a team, my team, like that. So to talk about the team, first of all, you talk about the pitching that, you know, you kind of push to the side. I have the percentages of that team. So that team is 99th percentile in strikeouts, 100th percentile in ERA, 99th percentile in WHIP. It's 84th in saves. And then if you wanted to show that wins are fluky, this team is 75th percentile in wins. So, yeah, there's probably some overachievers in that group, but so far they've been dynamite. And I think it's the staff is 8th overall in total pitching points in the OC. So, you know, despite all that, it's been a really strong group for me. And then when you talk about stolen bases, yeah, I recognized that pretty early that was a weakness. And that was something I invested a lot of energy in fab of finding and wrote, you know, just fab pickup. So some of them all didn't work out, but then I landed on a Jake McCarthy. I got Ha-Sung Kim. I got Michael Garcia. And it's really paid off. So for my stolen bases, I was looking at week 8, I was 38th percentile in stolen bases. And this past week, I'm up to over 70% in stolen bases. So it's really worked. Willy Castro was just an add this week, so he hasn't contributed. But, you know, losing Tyro Estrada for a few weeks, you don't want to make sure I didn't lose ground there. So I identified that as an area to move up in early, and I've been attacking that.
Yeah, this I love this stuff. You guys are the type of players I love competing against. And there's like hundreds of us, right? Everyone has their own little bit of a different tweak to the process, but we're grinding. We're you know, it's of course, yeah, you want to win a big prize. It's big money. You want the glory and all that, but it's also fun along the way. Like, I literally couldn't think of a more fun thing to be doing than fantasy baseball, especially grinding down the stretch. And that second team, by the way, I did want to ask you about it in comparison. It's 7th overall. I think it's maybe 800 points behind. I personally, just on first glance, I thought I almost liked it a little better. I think I did. Unfortunately, I did sort of. You're right. I did kind of glance over the fact that your pitching staff is legit, you know, one of the best in the entire contest. But there's something about this team that's incredibly nice. Acuna to start, right? So you got Acuna. You got Rafael Devers, Corey Seager, JD Martinez. You can just lock into utility. You got the hot boys on Cincy, Jonathan India and Steer. You got Yandy Diaz, Siri, Merrifield again on this one. Closers, Estevez and Graveman. Am I mistaken?
Yeah, this team had Ryan Helsley. It's been
okay.
This team had Ryan Helsley and Estevez as the two closers, and I had to drop Helsley.
And then on the pitching side, I mean, again, Spencer Strider. So not only top pitcher in baseball right now, like, I see much better things ahead of him in the second half. Like, I feel like it's at this point, it's just going to be, you know, game over. And especially one thing I noticed today when I was just looking at some stats, Sierra, only one in baseball, I believe, under with qualified pitchers, like under 3. And it's like basically more than half a point higher, half a run higher than any other pitcher in baseball. Like, and then the strikeouts, nearly 40%. The guy is an absolute beast. So I think he'll be the one pitcher locked into the first half of next season. So that team is great. And then the rest of the staff, just to round out, Luis Castillo, Bailey Ober, Carlos Rodon, baby, Nathan Eovaldi. You got Jaymont, Bayo again, Grayson again, and then Gavin Williams. Nice little fab ad.
Yeah, so without that, for that team, and I honestly talk about the first OC also, if I don't mention that one team has Ohtani and this second OC has Acuna, that's like in Moneyball where they don't talk about that they had, you know, MVPs and Cy Youngs. You would think that the whole team was made out of, you know, guys that they, you just acquired for cheap. So obviously those guys have been cheat codes and they've been a big part of the success. But to talk a little bit about those teams and my process with drafting the OCs, I started by looking at last year and where I came up short. And for me, that was being short on power. And I made it a mission this year that I said, I want guys who can hit home runs no matter what the ball environment is like. And when I looked at players like that, I also, again, I'm not a high volume player. I only have 5 NFBC teams total, or 6, include 1 Gladiator and a couple home leagues. So when I'm drafting at the beginning of the draft, I'm looking for high ceiling, but also higher floor. So a guy like Acuna, he had some risks, but also the ceiling is just tremendous. Same with Otani. And I looked at some of these, you know, sluggers, the Pete Alonzos, the Rafael Devers, the Matt Olsons, and, you know, people were, hey, I need balance. I need stolen bases early, you know, guys, you know, who are a combination. And these power hitters, to me, are pretty safe investments because they have pretty high floors. And, you know, and Pete Alonso's floor is maybe 30 home runs. And if the ball environment is right and he stays healthy, it's 50 plus. And you're seeing it this year with Olsen. He's crushing. He's got close to 30 home runs in the first half. So I looked at it that I wanted some power anchors at the beginning with some speed, right? I've got, obviously, one team had Acuna, so that was speed there. Otani and Betts chip in stolen bases. So I wanted to start with power, you know, good base of power early, and then dive into pitching. And the way I liked the draft board, the pitching I liked was in rounds, you know, 3 through 6. So hit pitching there. And then, you know, from there, I also map out my draft. So I would say I map out the first 12 rounds. I've got players, you know, multiple players at each picks. And then the later rounds, I like to just write down the names of guys that I like in order and just kind of go through and kind of plan backwards. Like, what can I get later? And then work my way to the front of the draft and, you know, build my team that way. And, you know, going through it, Steve Weimer had a great article in the FTN draft guide, and one of the best articles I probably read this season, about protecting your ratios up top. And that was something I definitely kept in mind, more so with the pitching than hitting, because again, those sluggers, you know, I wasn't as concerned if they hit 300, but I wanted to try to avoid guys who are going to hit, you know, 220s or lower than that. But with protecting ratios and pitchers, I wanted to make sure that the aces I got had elite ratios and they were going to, you know, help my ERA and WHIP category and not be detracting, because those are harder to find later. And I think I was able to, you know, to pull that off pretty successfully.
And as far as which team you do you have, I mean, is the number one overall, is that your horse, or are you just kind of hoping just one of them works out?
So, like you mentioned, the team that's in first, its weakness is stolen bases. And we talked about the guys I have on the team to address that. And I think in this environment, finding stolen bases is easier than finding saves. It's been really tough for that second OC team to get ahead in saves, because I had Ryan Helsley, had to drop him. I fabbed Liam Hendricks the week he came back, spent a good chunk of fab on him. He got me one save. He got hurt. I got Daniel Hudson for a spec a couple weeks ago. One save on my bench, he's gone. So I had Jose Alvarado, he got hurt. So it's just been tough with that team to find saves. So if a bona fide closer comes around the trade deadline and I'm able to grab him, or maybe a couple guys, and get some saves, absolutely, that team can move up. It's been tough sledding finding saves on the waiver wire this year.
Dan, which of those two teams, the Drews, do you like better? The Otani up top or the Acuna?
I mean, you're forcing me to decide. I'm going to go with the second team. I'm with you, Vlad. I like that better, and it's within striking range. As Drew knows, I almost think more so than the other tournaments. There's so much turnover in the top 10. It's kind of nuts and cool. So I don't look at the first team as having a, you know, huge edge over the seventh. That's scarier one.
No, I appreciate the kind words. So yeah, it's been, you know, one team has risen up to first. This team, it's the second OC. That team's been ahead of time. So it's, you know, they definitely on Sundays and before, you know, take up my attention of, hey, you know, because they also have unique differences and areas to make up ground. So it's like, hey, on this team, what are my plan for stolen bases? This other team, how am I trying to attack saves? While at the same time, you're trying to enforce in the rest of your team and not fall behind. So even that first OC team, I think what's been successful, I've been successful for both of them, is even areas of strengths I've kept reinforcing throughout the year. So, you know, Bayo and Ober were not on the pitching staff of that OC team. That's the first OC team that has the eighth most pitching points. That was already a strong pitching staff, but throughout the year, early in the year, I was churning through bench pitchers where I wasn't looking to start them, but I was just like, let me try to find talented guys that can help me later on when I need them. And I was able to fab those guys at pretty reasonable costs. And they've been real key where I've been able to plug them in. I've lost McClanahan. I had fabbed Chris Sale in that first OC for a fair amount of money. You know, I had to drop him. And these guys have really helped stabilize the depth. And I think, you know, being able to stream from your bench versus having to stream from the waiver wire has been a big advantage for me, where I haven't had to spend money on two start starters or, you know, put in questionable guys in my lineup. I've really been able to protect the ratios and still, you know, amass a lot of strikeouts.
Ratios, man. If I can only get some ratios, and you know, it wouldn't be a podcast without me mentioning my Acuna Trout. I'm sorry, my Acuna Ohtani Strider 12 team OC. I think it's like somewhere between 100, 200. I love this squad. Even the pitching is solid, but the ratios are really down there. Like, I think I got blasted by a lot of, like, you know, the Flaherty's and Kopechs. I just, you catch everyone at the wrong time and some injuries. So that team just, I don't know. Hopefully it can get there. It felt like a team of dreams. So we'll see if it can just kind of get in the race for some fun. I would be very excited about that.
Yeah. No, Vlad, Daniel, I don't know how often you check the overall standings, but I probably check it a little bit more than I would like to. Knowing that I don't.
Dan is looking right now as we speak.
I would say, unlike some people who shall be unnamed, I think by unnamed, I mean Mark Strebro. I guess I'll lie and say I don't really even check the standings, maybe once on Sunday, which, you know, is complete bull, Vlad. So it's kind of like it's second nature now to click on my teams and go, overall standings OC, one click. So probably about, I don't know, a couple times a day. And by couple, I mean about 15.
But Vlad, I've been waiting for that famous OC. I've been stalking the overalls to see when that team's going to make its push up there. I know it'll make its way up there soon.
Let's see. Yeah. So, and that's the thing, about 45% of the season to go, 11 more fab periods. I don't know. We're gonna have to squeeze some dollar bids there towards the end. Real quick question before we get into the breakout players, just one takeaway, like once any lesson, you know, we kind of covered a lot of this here, but, you know, obviously, you know, luck plays a big factor as far as, you know, a lot of our success. We touched on that. But I think everyone, we all try to work on, or weaknesses or biases and things like that. Is there anything in terms of just draft strategy or your approach to fab or just overall theories or just anything, like one takeaway that you can have now that you're going to take into your 2024 draft season?
Daniel, you want to go or you want me to take it first?
Yeah, you can go first.
Got it. All right. So I'll give you two real quick. So I think in terms of draft, the one thing I can get better at is identifying the impact, the rookies that are actually worth the draft cost. And I think what's been a struggle, so that would be like Bobby Witt last year and this year Corbin Carroll. And I think what's been the struggle for me is that their draft cost has been pushed above what the projections say, so they don't come out as values on my SGP sheet. And I struggle with that of like, who's the right guy to jump for and ignore the SGP. So I think I can work on getting better at trying to identify those real difference maker rookie players that are worth the high push when people push them up the draft. And then for fab, the one thing that I got better at this year, but there's definitely room for improvement, is cutting the injured fringe 12 team players. Mm-hmm. And Vlad, you talk about this a lot, and it's something I really take to heart, is in 12-team leagues, you have your difference makers, and you got everybody else that you can churn and burn on and off your roster. And it's trying to identify those fringe guys that you can cut, and then, hey, I can find someone off the waiver wire who's just as good, and that guy's not wasting a roster spot on my bench. And the good example for me was like Chaz McCormick. He got hurt. It didn't seem like he was going to be out that long. It's all right, I'll keep him on my roster for a week. It turned 1 week, turned to three. And then finally I was like, all right, I got to cut him. He's been out too long. He's not that good anyway. We're really deep dive. So I think I can get better at cutting those guys. And I actually did that. I cut Andrew McCutchen from that first OC team because I looked at the Raswell player rater. He's only like outfielder 55 for the season, despite, you know, a resurgent year. So I'm like, all right, I think I can probably find similar value on the waiver wire.
By the way, to that point, that's kind of something I did that apparently was controversial to some people, but I cut Leody Taveras in a 12-team OC. Just looking ahead to the schedule, I'm looking at like, okay, he gets the Dodgers staff, Astros, Padres, Guardians, Tampa. Yeah, and I understand all of his X stats like match what he's been performing. So he's like hitting 295, his XBA is 298. Slugging, everything matches. Like he steals bases. He right. He's in Texas. All these great things. At the end of the day, I'm looking at other player. Like I just made the move. It's just something that made sense to me at the time, even though it may not make sense. It's, you know, but the question was, but Leody's been good. I go, yes, he has been, but I don't know if he's going to be good enough for what I need over like the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, you're one of the best for a reason. And you're, you know, trying to force, you know, look into the future and not just harp on, hey, this guy's been productive for me now. He's going to keep being productive. I did a similar thing with Bryson Stott. I know you love him. I love him too. But I kind of saw the value tailing off. So I actually dropped him a few weeks ago. But yeah, I think you know, you're always going to have a few cuts that you regret. I think that's a big thing that's talked about, that you're not making enough moves if there's not a couple guys that you regret cutting. But especially in those 12-team leagues, there are some tough cuts that you got to make. And you got to, you know, if you think you're making your team better, you got to try to make the move and improve the squad.
Dan, what you got for a lesson? Are you still over there staring at your overall standing?
I'm not answering that question, no, I think there's two things. I think one of the biggest things that I've learned is, you know, there's that kind of, call it a narrative point, that, you know, in these leagues with the weekly sets, you can't skew hitter heavy early. You need to grab at least one or two. And I think I've effectively eliminated that bias completely, which is a big accomplishment for me because it's bias, and I still struggle with most of them. And I think that's really helped a lot. And I would say particular to a 12 team in the OCs, it just kind of adds to the ease of drafting. And that's kind of a big one. And I think with my teams, that's been a good lesson. I think the other one is I've learned that sometimes I overcorrect in categories that I have a bias against. As an example of Vlad, and you can see this on pretty much all my teams, my one that's top 50 and number three, I think I have a 50-point lead in runs in both leagues. I really, really focused on runs. I think it's a category sometimes we forget. And so I obviously skewed too heavy. So kind of watching myself to not go too far. And that's a lesson that I'm learning this year because obviously I didn't learn it or didn't become aware of it. So I would say those are the two. There's others, but those are the two biggies.
Yeah, it's a little self-discipline. Like you have a team that is 98th percentile in stolen bases, and you can't keep running Story Ruiz out there. You have a deficiency in power. Put him on the bench. He happens to be facing two lefties in this period. It's an easy sit. You don't have to play him for name value alone. It's like, you know, you're not really missing out on the stolen bases. This is a numbers game, and that's what we're trying to do here. Let's get some breakout hitters here. Let's just kind of rapid fire these. But I wanted to just ask you guys, let's talk two hitters, two pitchers each that it doesn't have to be guys in the fab pool, just anywhere in baseball who we think will have better second halves than first halves. So let's just fire them off. Drew, let's do your two hitters, and then we'll go to Dan and then me.
Sure. So hitter number one for me is Ahmed Rosario. So Ahmed Rosario, currently 27th shortstop on the Razzball Player Rater, has not been good. I think he was drafted somewhere in the range of 10 to 12 shortstop off the board in draft season. And I think when you look at Ahmed Rosario, June 3rd, he had knee soreness, and they gave him 2 days off for that. He had a day off just from playing, and then the team had a day off. Since then, he's hit 333 with 19 runs and 20 RBIs. He only has one home run and one stolen base in that time, but he's still been worth $12, according to Razzball, in the last 30 days. And I think you're going to see more of that going forward, because I think having a couple of days off for his knee really helped him. And I think Razzball or the projections have a pretty good sense of him earning $11 or $12 the rest of the way. And that would put him pretty high up. That would put him around shortstop 11 right now, if that was a full season total. So he's not available in the obviously main event and OC either. But I think if you're in a trade league like Yahoo and you need an average or stolen base boost, I would expect if he's healthy, the stolen base should pick up in the second half. And what's great about the Guardians lineup and Terry Francona is Ahmed Rosario is penciled in as the number two hitter every day and will be as long as he's healthy. And then Yahoo actually has shortstop and outfield eligibility. So that's like a nice little perk if you're looking for someone to help out the average and runs. You know, like Daniel mentioned, runs is often underlooked category. So if you need help there, I would look at Ahmed Rosario.
And your other one?
My other one's Matt Mervis. And
here we go. Love it.
Matt Mervis stunk in his MLB debut. He was terrible. You know, there's no two ways around it. But I think we've seen it this year, you know, Josh Lowe and Jared Kelenic, that, you know, sometimes these guys struggle their first time around the majors, and it takes them a little bit time to get going. And I was looking at Matt Mervis back in AAA, and his second stint in AAA has been the same. He's been the same productive self, even maybe more so than his first time in AAA this season. He's got a 139 WRC plus since June 16th when he was sent down, you know, 16% walk rate, 21% strikeout rate, pretty similar to what he was doing prior. And it looked like, you know, they were attacking with fastballs. When I looked at his Baseball Savant's stuff, his Statcast, he was really struggling against fastballs. But when he did make contact, he was really barreling the ball up. So he was 55th in barrels per barrel event and 78th in barrels per plate appearance. So he's making hard contact. He's just got to make more of it and try to cut the strikeouts down. So I think when you look at the trade deadline, the Cubs should be sellers. Jared Young is currently blocking him. I don't see a reason why between the moves they make that Mervis should still be down after the trade deadline. And yeah, he could be a quadruple A player. He's clearly too good for triple A right now. He's crushing. He should be in the majors. And I think if you need a, you know, a shot on the arm in power, you know, he has the power potential. And if he gets the opportunity, they play him every day. He's a guy who could really help you in the power categories, you know, down the stretch for the last couple of months. And he's widely available in all formats in NFBC.
Yeah, I know I'll be saving a couple of bucks for him, especially if I'm in need of power and a corner infielder. Dan, give us the quick one on your two players here, your two hitters for the second half.
I did want to insert a little commentary before then. Brett, time me, Vlad. I'll do it in 10 seconds. I wanted to pick players that are not already owned because I wanted to be inspired by you that even though I'm competing, there's no reason to be disingenuous in any levels. My first guy is Brandon Lau. I took him. He's a little bit of a gamble. His back destroyed his year last year. It obviously flared up and destroyed the first half. This is obviously somewhat narrative-based, but he swears that he's over it. And again, this guy, when healthy, was so underappreciated. And he's on the Rays right now. So I think he's just a great guy to put on your bench, because as soon as he gets hot, you'll ride that. Because he's streaky as heck. The guy just doesn't miss mistakes. So he just needs a couple of them and then he's rolling. And then my other one is Seth Brown. Also an injury one. because I mean, I think it was a grade two oblique that knocked him out early. And so anybody that gets kind of interrupted earlier on at the beginning of season, it's usually going to throw everything off. So he's back healthy. I think in the last, I want to say all the underlying numbers show he's still the same hitter. And he's got this nice break for the All-Star break. And the other reason I love him more for my sanity is I really think he's set up to be a perfect bench stream bat. I just think the, you know, we'll start it with the Rockies, right Coors, the easy one, right after the break. And with exception to some of the games, I think there's, you know, an away series against the Dodgers, and then he's got one with like a seven-game set at Texas and at Houston. But otherwise, those away matchups are really good. And so I just think he's – remember, he's a power-speed guy. So I think if you're set on average, I think he's a better lock to bounce back than Brandon Lau. But – I'm still a little bullish on Lau because he actually came back earlier than they thought. So those are kind of cheating a little, right? Injury, but those are my two guys.
Nice. You got an A there and a platoon. But I actually missed out on my that team 15th overall. I really thought hard about. I mean, I needed that Haesung Kim sort of coverage on second base and needed some home runs. And I thought really long and hard about my bid. The guy in second place, he bid. So I had 11. I dropped it down to 9. He bid 10. So there you go. That's how it works. So it wasn't meant to be. My two hitters, one is Ryan Mountcastle of Baltimore. He's been dealing with some vertigo. The timing with Ryan O'Hearn, kind of, you know, the guy that's been a laughing stock of the fantasy community for so long, has been just a red hot hitter against righties in the middle of that lineup, being the cleanup man in the midst of just like a phenomenal lineup, like basically. You know, one Ryan took over the other. But the fact of the matter remains, Ryan Mountcastle is, I mean, he's been one of the hardest hitters in baseball over the last couple seasons. He's maintained, at least in the games he played, he maintained the 15% hard hit rate from last year, among the top in average exit velocity, hard hit rate. Dude mashes and then has some good guys around him, you know, Adley and the rest of those fellas, Gunnar Henderson there at the top of the lineup. So he had 11 homers in 61 games. The vertigo hopefully is behind him, should kind of step right in there. So I think if he's available in any leagues, he isn't in very many, at least in NFBC 12 teamers, but he's one guy I'd be looking at. And then CJ Krohn, not the sexiest of picks, but that Colorado schedule gets a little better in the second half. He's healthy. He's back. They got some home weeks coming up. So, you know, get a little Ezekiel Tovar there ahead of him in the lineup. I like CJ Krohn. So I did kind of splurge the place where I needed power and had some money left over. I did end up, I think, spending 40 something. It was an overbid by like $20, but had to do it, had to get Krohn on that team. So going to be happy about that. Anything on any of our hitters here before we jump into the pitchers real quick?
The only thing I'll quickly say about Krohn and the Rockies, the near-term schedule is not great. So I think next week they've only got 5 games. Maybe the week after that, they're on the road potentially. I'm not sure about that. So just I picked up Krohn actually in one of the OCs. So I'm hopefully he doesn't get traded and he continues to produce well. But in the short term, good to have some flexibility to move him out of your lineup to really maximize volume there.
Yeah, by the way, exactly. If you do have alternatives, so even though they get 5 of their next 8 at home over the next week and a half, the pitchers that they'll be facing, it's basically like Carlos Rodon, Gerrit Cole, Framber Valdez, Braxton Garrett, Jesus Luzardo, a bunch of really tough lefties there for the most part, plus Cole. So, interesting group. And then it gets a little bit better after that. Pitchers, I'll just kind of drop mine in here real quick. One is Taj Bradley, and not somebody I have really any shares of this season, but because they've lost most of their rotation, I mean, he's just going to have to stick in there. I'm not really familiar with his innings limitations or whatnot, but I think he'll be usable. And just kind of noticing his huge differential in his actual versus, his like for example, his he's got a 3.5 Sierra and a 3.34 xFIP, but a 5.5 ERA. Like that's not the end all be all, but it means something to me. With that, a 30% strikeout rate, good offense supporting him. And just, I feel like he's just had some bad luck. You look at some of his other indicators. So Taj is one. The other one, I guess, is one that matches a sheet on you know, with Daniel here. So I'm not trying to append you, and I apologize that I went first when I guess I was supposed to go last. But I will just say I don't have any Zach Wheeler. I wish I did, because I just kind of mapped out his schedule. Like, if they remain like without rainouts and all that, I've never seen anything like it. So they're going to get the Guardians, then Pirates, Marlins, Nationals, Twins with the highest strikeout rate in baseball against righties, and then the Nationals again. And granted, you know, teams like Cleveland, Washington, they're actually really low in terms of strikeouts versus right-handers, or just strikeouts in general, tough teams to strike out. But nevertheless, it's a nice place for his ratios to get right and to get some wins. So I really do like Zach Wheeler. Let's jump into yours, Dan.
You already stole the guest thunder, man. I'm hurt. No, obviously, like you said, with the indicators, I think his strand rate is probably career worst, you know. ERA should not be over 4. I just think it's a layup. Everything, the strikeout rate, I mean, it always hovers around that, but it's fine. And I just think that team is already white hot with that crazy away a winning streak. And I actually just think that team's going to stay hot. I think they have a lot of home games, like a huge home game stretch to start the second half, if I'm not mistaken. Just so everything looks good, and obviously he's a stud. So I could easily see the second half being ERA should be under 3. So not much to add. I think it's a layup for him. Do you want me to go to my second one?
Or? Yeah.
Yeah. You'll love this one, Vlad. Nick Pivetta.
I love it because I just added a bunch, and
I'm going to make
you been feel off. I've been off the train.
I'll make you feel even better. The definition of a small sample size, but it looks really good now. And if you're looking for kind of obviously correlation, he talked about struggling with the pitch clock. And I think saying I'm finally used to it around mid-June. Again, uber small sample size, but, you know, he's a guy that everybody doesn't give up on. You got the injuries to Whitlock. I know they've been resistant to put him back in the rotation. But I think he very well could smash. So I got to get more shares. They're still out there. But he's one that I think is going to surprise even the Pivetta lovers, put it that way.
And I had someone, I forget if it was in the DMs or a sub, mention to me about Pivetta, that they basically, the coaching staff wants to keep him in the, you know, like, not starting games role, which almost in some cases is even better, right? You don't have to face the top of these rotations and just, you know, I mean, or top of the, you know, offense, and just go for it, man. Just get your, give me your 7 strikeouts and give me a win.
Yeah. Hey, what you got? Be huge.
All right. I like it.
So my first pitcher I've got is Yu Darvish, currently 75th starting pitcher in the Razzball Player Rater. I haven't seen much talked about Yu Darvish, how bad he's been this year, but for a guy who was drafted pretty highly as a starting pitcher, he really hasn't had a great year. And I think with Yu Darvish, he obviously, his claim to fame is he throws so many pitches. So I started to look at his pitches, and all the different systems classify them differently. So I think it's really up to you to figure out, and you meaning Yu Darvish, not you the listener, but Yu Darvish, to figure out how to optimize his pitches in the second half and figure out which ones are working for him and focus on throwing those. And I also did some reading that it looks like he's calling his own pitches with the pitch comm. So maybe he's got to get out of his own head, let the catchers call the pitches and just kind of go with the flow there. And I think this is one where you really got to try to trust the projections on a veteran pitcher. And the projections do like him rest of season to be quite valuable. And he's been a little unlucky this year, a career low left on base percentage. His Sierra is about 0.9 below his current ERA. And his strikeout percentage is pretty stable to last year. The walks are up a little bit, but nothing crazy. A swinging strike rate is down a little bit, but again, you know, still pretty decent. So I think Yu Darvish should have a bit of a rebound, and I expect the Padres to have a little bit of a rebound as well. I think they underperformed in the first half, and they're obviously uber talented. You know, it looks like they shouldn't be selling. They've won a couple of games leading into All-Star break, so hopefully maybe they add a couple pieces and the whole team gets a boost going forward, and hopefully Darvish rises with them.
And your second?
My second one is, Vlad, I know another guy that you like, and you've been on, is Nestor Cortes. So Nestor Cortes, he's always currently on the 60-day IL, and he's not going to come back until the first weekend in August. So a good stash. I looked, he's about 80% owned in OCs, so still opportunity in some of the OCs to grab him and stash him. He, you know, is coming off this injury, multiple injury. And I thought what was interesting, you know, reading about Cortes is he kind of admitted he had that hamstring injury at the beginning of the year. And there was a quote from him that his hamstring, it kind of caught up with his arm, and he wasn't really totally synced coming out of spring training, and that's kind of affected it. And so I think now that he's had this time to recover and feel good, the early reports is he's been pain-free throwing and he should return that first week in August. I think that's a good sign for him to produce. Stuff Plus and the Pitching Bot are still a fan of his stuff. And I think, again, the Yankees offense has been dreadful, and hopefully when he's returning, Judge is returning, maybe hopefully around the same time frame. Maybe the Yankees upgrade their outfielder, you know, left fielder for pretty cheap. So hopefully he's getting some more run support. And Cortes really hasn't been as bad as his frontline numbers would be. You know, he had a couple two rough starts in particular around against the Rangers and the Rays. So if you kind of look, take those out, the rest of the starts, he's been pretty usable, showing last year wasn't a complete fluke. So I think when he's healthy, a better Yankees offense, you know, Nestor doing his nasty Nestor things, I think he can be productive in the second half for the last 2 months for some teams needing some SP depth.
Excellent. Just as a recap there, Drew likes Amed Rosario and Matt Mervis as his hitters, second half breakouts, and then Yu Darvish, Nestor Cortes as the pitchers. Daniel Prepas is on Brandon Lau, Seth Brown, Zach Wheeler, and Nick Pivetta. And I've got Ryan Mountcastle, CJ Krohn, Zach Wheeler as well, and Taj Bradley. Let's wrap things up here with a quick, just your one word, who wins these divisions. And I'll kind of set them up here. Start off with the AL West. You've got, you know, Houston's always in the mix. You got the Rangers on the top. They cannot be stopped. And you still got Seattle, and you still got your Angels, Dan. So who you got, Dan? Who's winning this division?
Okay. Reverse jinx time. I still think that that Texas wins the division. I haven't all year trusted that Houston team. I just don't think they have the pitching. Eovaldi obviously is regressing a little bit, but that lineup is crazy dangerous. You know, Josh Young obviously is a true breakout. So sad to say, but if we win, it's going to be the wild card. I make the bets.
True.
I like the Mariners. I think the Rangers pitching staff is kind of overperformed. I think you're going to see some regression from them. The Astros have just had a ton of hits, injuries, you know, hitting, you know, lineup wise and starting pitching. Mariners have a great pitching staff, great bullpen. I think they look to add maybe a couple bats at the deadline, and I think that pitching staff carries them.
All right, I'm going to go in a completely different direction from all of you. I'm going to go with Houston because Yordan is back and Altuve will be back. And I think Christian Javier bounces back a little bit. So I'm going to go with Houston. I don't like it. I don't want it. That's just what I'm going to go with there. AL East kind of wide open. Tampa at top. Baltimore right behind them. Two games behind. Toronto 7 games behind. Yankees 8. Boston 9. I'm going to go stick with Tampa here.
Yeah, I'm a Yankees fan, but I think Tampa's the most talented. Kevin Cash does a great job maximizing the talent out of that roster. It would concern me a little bit that they don't probably open up the purse, the pocketbook to make a free a splash at the trade deadline. But I think they have the horses to hold off Baltimore. They're just a really talented team.
Yeah, I also agree with the Rays, and I actually think they're well positioned to trade some of their prospects. My gut tells me that they trade someone like Manzardo for a mid-level pitcher. You know, grab a guy. They're like the Dodgers of the East. They can make magic with pitchers. So I think they got staying power. I'm sticking with the Rays too.
And then I don't know if we really care, or at least people from these teams would, of course, fans of these teams. Cleveland, Minnesota in a tight race. Detroit a few games back, may not get there. The White Sox probably have a better chance. But I'll This is really tough. Just give me your quick one on this.
I like the Twins. Again, focus is pitching. They've got one of the best pitching staffs in baseball, really stingy giving up runs. Again, their holes are pretty easy to identify. They need some hitters, healthy hitters. I think those should be a little bit easier and cheaper to acquire at the trade deadline. The Guardians, again, maybe don't open up the pocketbooks to acquire payroll. So I like the Twins to hold off the Guardians.
I'm boring, man. I agree with what he said. I'm going with the Twins too.
I'm going to go with Twins here as well. And at least no problem. It's Atlanta. I don't think anyone disagrees here.
I disagree.
You speak now. You do?
Yep. I think the Phillies win the division.
Wow.
I think they're going to have a crazy good second half.
Let's talk. Let's talk after the show.
But, all right.
Sidekick.
All right. Make some bets.
Yes. NL Central. Reds are up on one on the Brewers. I know Woodruff will come back at some point. Maybe we get the real Corbin Burns back. Man, the offense stinks. I don't know. Outside of Christian Yelich, I don't know. I'm gonna go Reds. Team of Destiny wins the Central.
Daniel, I'll let you go.
Same. Boring. Sorry, Vlad.
I'm going to disagree. I think I'm going to take the Brewers. I think I love the Reds. Ellie is amazing. Watching him run around the bases last week, electric. I think they haven't hit their, Ellie goes 3 for 45, 2 week stretch, which may come, may not come. The Brewers, a little bit more experience. Yelich having an MVP season. Woodruff coming back should help. You never know. Brewers X factor. They could just decide to trade Burns or do something crazy like they did with Hader last year. But I like their experience to kind of hold off a Reds team that's maybe a year too early, kind of like the Orioles last year.
All right, and then the NL West, it's tied now. In that last game of the season, or the first half, Dodgers tied the Diamondbacks. They were down quite a few games, and they're back, a little hot streak. Then you've got the Giants 2.5 back and the Padres 8.5. I got to go with my Dodgers. I don't think the D-backs have enough firepower, and then, something happens to Corbin Carroll, and one more freak shoulder thing, and we've really got issues. So anyone disagree?
Nope.
Yeah, the Dodgers for me. I agree on Carroll. And the pitching staff also, I think, is kind of floated by, but may see some correction in the second half.
Last questions here. Cy Young Awards in the AL, it's a tight one. It looks like top three guys so far. It's Framber Valdez, Kevin Gausman, and Gerrit Cole. I assume McClanahan, once he gets back, probably mixes in. You got Shohei up there in the odds, Castillo and Eovaldi, a little bit of dark horses. Who is your pick, guys?
So, bud, you asked NL or AL first?
AL.
AL. So, this is a tough one. I'll go homer pick and I say Gerrit Cole, but I could see it being swayed by which of these teams makes a run in the second half. Maybe one of them makes the playoffs, one of the other teams falls off. Gerrit Cole's just been really solid, and he puts up the raw counting stats, good ERA, strikeouts, wins that voters typically align with. So I'll take him.
Oh. Daniel, are you still looking at your overall standings?
I'm not. Dude, you're killing me, man. I've actually been really good this time, so I'm going to be defensive.
Who's going to win the AL Cy Young?
Man, I can't really decide on that. I kind of want to say Eovaldi because if Texas wins that division, I think he's got a shot, but I don't feel very strongly about it. So, but if I had to pick one, I'd pick him.
All right, I'm going to say Framber.
That's the smooth pick. That's a good one.
In the NL, you've got Zach Gallen is plus 200 last I saw, Kershaw behind him, and then Strider a little bit behind last I looked. But I mean, maybe I'm looking at old odds. It's got to be Strider's got to be getting up there at this point. I don't know why. I mean, maybe Blake Snell. I mean, if he just continues to do what Snell does and then kind of has another second half Snell, you got to assume he'd be in the competition, in the conversation. I feel like if I was putting some money down, I feel like Snell might be a good one. But it's really hard for me to see Spencer Strider not winning this award this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a layup. I don't see how it's not him if he stays there.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's going to finish with maybe upwards of 80 strikeouts more than the guy in second.
playing for the best team in the NL East or in the NL in general, sorry. And I think he's just, you know, again, the surface stats is what the voters go through, you know, look at KISS. I think it's Strider. And just on a side note, I think it's just about betting advice. You guys are in California, no legal sports gambling there. I'm in New York. New York has legal sports gambling, but actually you can't vote on things influenced by humans. So things like Cy Young or MVP are, you can't bet on in New York. So just like a small quirk as we talk about gambling odds that none of us can act on legally.
Which is a shame because, you know, everyone there just has their super strong allegiances and, you know, any bets on, well, Ohtani come to the Mets, you know, they could clean up just on those bets alone. Cole Cy Young, Anthony Rizzo for MVP, you know. Guys, yeah. this is great. Any last things here before we close out? I know, Drew, first of all, man, dude, it's absolute pleasure having you on the show here. Daniel, I'm sorry we didn't get you surly enough. I think we'll have to do like a one-on-one, like late night podcast at some point.
I think we have to.
Yeah. We're very, very tame today. So, I apologize for that. You know, keeping the show a little too professional, and you know, we've got overall standings to look at and everything. But anything that you guys want to promote or discuss, or any last minute words here for our listeners?
I'm going to raise my degree of difficulty unnecessarily. Drew, if you want to tilt the shit out of me, just start posting about Ha-Sung Kim every day, because a couple of the teams have him. And it's helping, and I had him, and I don't anymore. So it'll make me feel like shit all year.
You know, I'm sure. I think, did you guys add Tariq Skubal?
No,
or did you not? Yeah,
he got added in a couple spots.
He got added by a few guys in the top 10, and that was a tough one. But I'm sure if I look through your roster, there's guys that you've got also that if you post about them, I could really use them as well. So it's all a combination. I probably won't be posting too much about Ha-Sung Kim. Like I said at the top, I'm a little superstitious, so I'm not, you know, I'm not cracking up anything because he hurt his toe, you know, kicking a water cooler. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? Like, I need you stealing bases, not kicking water coolers.
The one other thing I'll add is, you willing to have some discussions? Now I'm really getting ahead of myself. If we're up there in the last week or two, some hedge bets or,
yeah, we'll see. It's a long season, Daniel. I've said it all show. I'm taking a week at a time. And when we get there, we get there. And I'm enjoying it now. And if the teams are still up there, then, yeah, we can have the conversations. But there's a long way to go between now and the last couple weeks in September.
Let me do a little mental time travel, man. Don't kill my joy.
But absolutely. We can be in touch. And Vlad, I wanted to say that I really appreciate your work. The community that you've built in the FTN Discord in general has been awesome. It's been really knowledgeable. Like I said, I'm a big believer of wisdom of the crowds and bringing in a lot of different perspectives and people's opinions. And I think you're great at giving honest advice. And I think the Fab article that you write that everybody references, Rob McCabe, which referencing it now for Fab analysis, it's the golden standard of Fab. And the fact that you're so transparent, you know, with all that data and insights and, you know, suggestions that everybody uses it and you're still able to succeed at a top level. It's really a great accomplishment. So I appreciate all the hard work that you and your team do. Great. And it's definitely made me a better fantasy player. And I won't speak for Daniel, but I would imagine he probably thinks the same.
Full agreement.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Very kind. And that's why I love having these type of shows and discussions, because we're learning. I mean, there's some people that are, you know, they speak out more and more vocal, like some more on Twitter, less on podcasts. And there's so much to gain, right? No matter how good you think you are, you can always get better. There's always some part of your process you can improve. There's always some weakness or some bias you can overcome. So this is great. These type of discussions help us learn, and you know, definitely would love to do it again sometime soon. So thank you both for coming on. Again, if you guys want or should, in fact, follow these gentlemen, Drew is at Fruedorte, FREWDORTE. You'll be
underscore in there. Throw an underscore.
Underscore. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. I haven't changed that Twitter handle since I got it, like, I don't know, 12 years ago. I think there's an underscore in there.
Okay. Yeah. And it'll be correct on the actual, on the podcast. So make sure you guys give him a follow. You'll see him near the, at the top of the leaderboards and hopefully for the rest of the season. And of course the man, Daniel Prepas, the, my guest of the year, podcast, fantasy baseball, newcomer of the year as a player, but podcast guest. You can find him at Stud Sterkelfan, StudSterkel fan. And thank you both gentlemen for coming on the show. Best of luck the rest of the season. So for Daniel and for Drew, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll catch you next week.